with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. It's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, the bitterly cold Wednesday edition. If you haven't been outside yet, you're lucky because it's really cold out there. We are at, 26 degrees right now. That's the high of the day. And we're surprised to even get that high. But the wind chill has been in the teens, the lower half of the teens, pretty much all day. Right now, the wind chill is 16 above. It's cold, yeah. And we've had some occasional snow showers, not a whole lot, but they've come and gone throughout the first half of the day. Well, you know, week away from Christmas. Week from today, it'll be Christmas Day afternoon already. Wow, wow. By the way, even colder tonight, down to 12 above actual temperature first thing tomorrow morning. Yikes. Well, it's that time of the year, right? Open talk on the first portion of the program today. We're going to talk later with guest Craig Shirley about, this is interesting, George Washington's mother. I realized he had a mother, of course, but I had no idea what her name was until I heard about Craig Shirley. And I certainly knew nothing about her. Well, it's an interesting story. So we'll talk about that with Craig Shirley a little bit later on the program. Her name, by the way, Mary Ball Washington, George's mother. Probably baked the cherry pie for him, I suppose. I better not ask Craig about that. But open talk to begin the program, 283-2525. 283-2525. Somebody asked me this morning, because we've been playing songs of Christmas for a couple of weeks now here on WISR, do you have a favorite Christmas song? I said, yeah, I've got a couple. Yeah. Do you have a particularly favorite Christmas song that you enjoy year after year after year? If I had to pick my favorite carol, as opposed to just a regular Christmas song, mine would probably be "Angels We Have Heard on High." I love that song, just love it. And there are some arrangements that are better than others. Not everybody has recorded that, but it's beautiful. Yeah. Do you have a favorite? 283-2525 is the number. Share it with us. 283-2525. In terms of secular, if you will, Christmas song, not a hymn or a carol. "Merry Christmas, Darling." It's nice. I can remember when that first came out, late 60s somewhere, 69, 70. Carpenters. Yeah, still good. Yeah. What do you think? 283-2525, open talk. Let's go to the phones. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Dave, hi. You just, when you were talking about what is your favorite carol, then out of your mouth came "Angels We Have Heard on High," and I stood here in the kitchen, and that was what I was saying at the same time you were saying it.
I love that song.
It's my all-time favorite. In fact, I am inclined throughout the year from time to time sing it to myself because I know it makes you laugh, but it's just one of those songs that I have loved forever, and it makes me laugh, and I'll tell you why, because my oldest daughter, when she was quite little, thought they were saying, instead of "Gloria in Excelsis Deo," she thought they were saying something about "in eggshells and mayo."
that happens a lot.
And so you see why when I think about it, she'll be coming home for Christmas. She is a retired Navy commander and lives in San Diego.
Well, you'll have to tease
her. She'll be coming home tomorrow.
Tease her about that.
And so when those words came out of your mouth, I thought, I can't resist calling Dave and telling him that he brought back a wonderful thought to my mind and gives me the opportunity to tell you how much I enjoy your program throughout the year. I call from time to time, and wishing you a blessed Christmas and a happy, healthy New Year.
And you
to
too.
You and your listeners.
And you too. Nice to talk to you today, my friend. Thanks. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
283-2525 is the number. Do you have a particularly favorite Christmas song that you look forward to every year? Hi, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Am I on now?
Yes, you are. Hi.
I've noticed all the songs that the radio has been playing, they're not playing as many carols as they usually do. Is that the way it goes? Or
You mean here on WISR you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, we tend to gear up when we get a little closer to Christmas, more of the sacred Christmas carols, okay? As opposed to, you know, right at the very beginning. We kind of build up to it. We mix, you know, Come All You Faithful and Oh Holy Night and that sort of thing. I mean, that was on our playlist when we started back in early December, but you'll hear more and more of that as we get really close to Christmas.
Well, I'm glad because I really like all of the carols and the Christmas songs too. But the Christmas time, it's just appropriate to play the carols to me.
I agree, absolutely. Do you have a particular Christmas song that drives you up the wall that you just can't stand?
Oh, I love them all.
Good for you.
I thank you, and I wish you a Merry Christmas.
Oh, and a Merry Christmas to you as well. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
It's the season to wish. Yeah, bye-bye. It's the season to wish Merry Christmas, is it not? 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. And while we're at it, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Too. We're just a week away from Christmas now. In fact, 1 week from today, early Christmas Day afternoon, all the kids and the grandkids and the nieces and nephews will have opened all of their gifts by now, right? There'll be wrapping paper and boxes lying all over the place, all over the living room. Christmas afternoon for the kids is a little bit anticlimactic. For those of us who are a little older, it's terrific because that's when we have Christmas dinner during the afternoon hours, week from today. Talking about Christmas songs here today, whether it's carols or more secular, if you will, Christmas songs. You have a favorite that you really, really like? 283-2525. Or one that you really, really don't like? I have a couple that drive me up the wall. And one of them is Jingle Bell Rock. And I know a lot of people like that. It's still, somebody recorded it now, too. It was Jessica Simpson has a newer version of that. I don't know what it is about that song, but I just go, my eyes hurt whenever I hear that song. 283-2525 is the number. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Good afternoon there, Dave.
Hi.
My favorite is Mary, Did You Know?
Oh, yes.
And especially with B.E. Taylor's rendition. I really love that.
He does a beautiful job on that. In fact, he's one of the few people I know that recorded that song. Unfortunately, B.E. Taylor died a couple of years ago.
Yes, he did.
He's
my brother-in-law's cousin.
He used to do a concert here in Butler every year.
No, personally. Well, I did know him personally, but my brother-in-law and he were cousins.
I used to talk to him pretty much every year in advance of his concert in Butler.
I missed seeing that. I guess my sister told me they went over Newcastle Salt last Saturday. I said, what? Yeah. Tell me about it. I could go on with you, you know. And his son has taken over. That'd probably be the last of them, you know.
Well, that's a beautiful, beautiful hymn, Mary, Did You Know? And that's very nice.
I look forward to hearing it at Mass on Christmas Day, too. It's really a beautiful song.
Yeah, that's sometimes played during Christmas services at churches. You're right.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Well, listen, Merry Christmas to you.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, and you have a healthy New Year.
And you too, my friend. So long. 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. Favorite Christmas songs or Christmas carols? And we get that term, I guess, from, Here We Come A-Caroling, the old English carol. Here We Come A-Caroling, da-da-da-da-da-da. And then there's Here We Come A-Wassailing. Is that the same thing? I don't know. But Christmas carol or Christmas hymn. Many of the carols are sung as hymns at Christmas services at churches around the world. Silent Night, for example, started out as a hymn for Christmas at a midnight mass in a small village in Austria, where Franz Gruber wrote that song. Yeah. 283-2525 is our number. Let's get back to the people here. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hi, Dave. Merry Christmas to you and Happy New Year.
Oh, same to you, my friend.
Oh, Holy Night. I heard a young lady sing that in church many, many years ago. And boy, if that one didn't move you, there was something wrong, especially the way she had done it and worked at it. She didn't ruin it like some folks do, but really, really enjoy that one.
That's true. You need a good voice to sing that one. You've got to be able to get up high there. Yeah. That's pretty. I like that one, too. Oh, Holy Night. That would be high on my list. Yeah. I like that one. Silent Night, it's a beautiful hymn, but I guess maybe it's because it's one of the first ones I ever learned a long, long time ago that, I don't want to say I'm tired of it, but I don't know. I guess it wouldn't be really, really, really high on my list. I actually learned that in German when I was in high school. I was taking German class. We learned that. Took us most of the month of December, I think, to learn it in German. Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. That's all I remember. Pretty amazing that I could remember that much. Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. Well, it, as I mentioned earlier, it was a song that was first played at a midnight mass in Austria, the German-speaking part of Austria. So the English translation that we have is actually a translation from the original German. Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. And if you hear that in a different arrangement or in four-part harmony, it's still fresh, still nice. That's very, very beautiful. Christmas song that I'm tired of, 12 Days of Christmas. I know the message is there, but the song just seems to go on forever and ever and ever. I could do without that one. It doesn't drive me up the wall. I don't go bonkers, but 12 Days of Christmas. Learned that one, I think, in elementary school. That was what I think my elementary music teacher figured that was a good way to keep us kids occupied for a couple of weeks, trying to memorize the... And we were so proud when we remembered the order in which they all came, you know. I can remember singing that for my aunt when she came to visit at Christmas time. Look, I know this song. I have it memorized. 12 Days of Christmas. And then there's a song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. You know that one? That's beautiful. You know, that comes from a movie. Yeah, that was not a Christmas carol from England or Germany, as so many of our Christmas carols are. It was from a movie. Let's get back to the people. It's Open Talk at 283-2525. Hi, caller. Hey. Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Go right ahead. You're on the air.
I wish you a Merry Christmas and a blessed New Year.
Same to you.
And I like a little town of Bethlehem.
That's nice. Yeah. That's a nice nice soft song, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an old one, too.
I like to hear that done very quietly. Yeah, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
A little town of
Bethlehem. I wish you a Happy New Year and blessed Christmas.
Same to you. Did you sing those songs when you were in elementary school, a chorus or something?
You know,
like
when
that?
I was in high school, which was in Sheffield Village, Ohio, I sang for the choir, the Oh Holy Night at our Christmas program.
Ah.
I led it, actually. It was a solo.
Wow. You must have a pretty good voice, huh?
Yeah, pretty good.
You still sing, like in a church choir or something?
Well, actually, I'm a pastor in a parish. And,
wonderful.
I'm in Hermony, PA, at St. Mary's Byzantine Catholic Church. And we have, it's a tiny little parish, but I came from the Parma Eparchy in Ohio about 12 years ago. So I've been in Pittsburgh, Arch Eparchy of Pittsburgh, for 12 years now.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a beautiful hymn, a little town of Bethlehem, and also, Oh Come All You Faithful.
Right. Agape Fidelis, right.
Yeah, in Latin, yeah. And many people sing at least part of it in Latin, because that's pretty familiar, Adeste Fidelis.
It is pretty familiar. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Hey, thanks for sharing.
Okay, get going. You take care.
Sure.
God bless.
Merry
take
Christmas care. To you. Yeah, it's very nice. A little town of Bethlehem, yeah. Mm. Adeste Fidelis. Laeti Triumphante. Mm. It's good. And you know, it's very popular to hear Ave Maria at this time of year. There are many singers who have put a version of Ave Maria on their holiday or Christmas CD. One of the most beautiful ones that I've ever encountered, and it's very old, Barbara Streisand, on her very first, I think she has two Christmas CDs, but it was the very first one, and it's a long, long time ago. I can remember because I bought a copy of it as a Christmas present for my mom way back when I was, I don't know, in high school or somewhere. But she has a gorgeous rendition of Ave Maria. And, of course, Barbara Streisand, a tremendous voice. Mm. And that's in Latin, too. Probably the only two songs that people would even be vaguely familiar with in Latin, I think. Ave Maria and Adeste Fidelis. Ave Maria means Hail Mary, yeah, in Latin. Beautiful song, beautiful. Actually, there's a few different arrangements of the Ave Maria, but the one Barbara Streisand does is just fantastic. I heard it a couple of days ago, and kind of stopped me in my tracks again. We need to take a break. We'll do that, and we'll be back with more Open Talk, talking about favorite Christmas songs, or not-so-favorite Christmas songs, here on the It's Your Turn program 1 week before Christmas. Take a break, and be back right after these words. A special message at Christmas and holiday time from the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They would not only like to wish you and yours a very, very merry and holy Christmas and a happy new year, but also to say thanks. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of those who have supported them in their efforts during the past year. Thanks to those of you who donated to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store, to those of you who patronized the thrift store. All the proceeds there go to help fund the food cupboard and the client aid program. And thanks to those of you who donated provisions to the food cupboard throughout the year. And thanks to those of you, too, who donated extra produce from your garden during the harvest season to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Cupboard. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all of you and yours from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler. Open Talk at 283-2525 here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Have a favorite Christmas song? Let us know. 283-2525. I mentioned Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Yeah, it's from a movie. That's where it first appeared. Sung by Judy Garland. You know the movie? Pat Parker, engineering on the other side of the glass. Hey, you don't know? Did you know it came from a movie? It's a musical, Meet Me in St. Louis, Judy Garland, and I want to say 1940s, I've seen it several times, I think in the 1940s, somewhere like 43, 44, when did Judy Garland do Wizard of Oz? That was 1939, I would guess 43, 44, around in there. Meet Me in St. Louis. And she sings, trying to remember the circumstances where the song comes in. The family, Judy Garland is one of several daughters in a big family. And their father, they live in St. Louis. And the father is going to take a new job in New York. And the girls don't want to move. And the littlest girl is crying. And it's Christmas time, and Judy Garland sings that to her to make her feel better. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And beautiful rendition, the original rendition by Judy Garland. There are many other beautiful ones, too. Much more recent recordings. That's pretty. That's pretty. What's not pretty? Well, there are... There have been some Christmas songs down through the years. I mean, sometimes a new one pops up and it's got staying power. And it's around for decades. Feliz Navidad. Remember that? Jose Feliciano. I mean, it's not high on my list, but it's a good Christmas song. It means Merry Christmas in Spanish. And that stuck around. But then there's some song, kind of gimmicky songs. I can remember one that was popular when one of my sisters was a little girl, and she played it incessantly. All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. And that was one of those songs that, after a while, every time I heard it, I felt that my eyes were going to pop out of my head. Which that one has peacefully and thankfully died. It's gonzo. All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth. It was a gimmick song. And then, of course, there were the Chipmunks. Yeah, I can do without that one, too. That didn't take very long to get tired of that. But you still hear that every once in a while. Not very often. The Chipmunks. I don't even know what the name of that song was. I honestly don't know. I guess I've tried to wash it out of my memory banks. I don't know. 283-2525, our number 283-2525. Favorite songs or movies at Christmas time. White Christmas is my all-time favorite Christmas movie. I know it may be trite. I love that film. I get out the DVD every year and watch it at some point during the Christmas season. Not only do I know exactly what's going to happen, I know many of the lines, but it's still just such a treat to watch. Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye, Rosemary Clooney, and Vera Allen, all long since dead now, but what a rapport they had in that film. Yeah, it was a silly plot, but who cares? You got the song White Christmas. Now, that was actually the second movie that the song White Christmas appeared in. It was an earlier movie, about 10, 12 years earlier, called Holiday Inn, where the song White Christmas first appeared. And for a while, many years ago, I thought that Holiday Inn was a better film, but I saw it a couple of years ago, and no, it's really, to me at least, it's really become dated. Bing Crosby was the only actor who was in both films. The other leading man in Holiday Inn was Fred Astaire. And who were the women? Virginia Dale and, I forget. But it just, to me at least, it doesn't hold a candle. It doesn't stand the test of time, let's put it that way. If you watch it, it seems, you know, it seems really old. It seems 1940s. White Christmas stands the test of time. Beautiful, beautiful film. And there are a few others, too, that a lot of folks like to watch at holiday time. You know, there are funny ones. National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. A lot of people like to watch that. That's usually on TV. Probably one of those cable channels plays it back to back to back to back to back all day. It's funny. I don't watch that one every year, but you know, every couple of years. Chevy Chase, that goes back away. That's probably the funniest Christmas movie of all time. But White Christmas would have to be at the top of my list. 283-2525, 283-2525. We're going to be talking a little bit later, shortly, in fact, on the program about George Washington's mother, for goodness sakes. Let's go back to the phones at 283-2525. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. You're on the air.
Hey, Dave, on the subject of Christmas songs,
yeah,
the one that really really hits your nerves wrong is that Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Oh, yes.
We could do without, yeah. We could do without that one.
You're right. I agree with you. That's one of those gimmick songs that you know, mercifully died away after a couple of years.
Yeah.
Well, Merry Christmas.
All the others that the folks called in and talked about, they're all good songs.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Merry Christmas, my friend. Nice to talk with you today.
Okay, Merry Christmas, Dave.
Sure.
Bye now.
So long now. 283-2525 is our number. Let's go to this line next. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi. I keep listening for Perry Como's Christmas Rose.
Christmas Rose, that's a good song. You know, I'd never heard that song until, I want to say about 10 years ago. And we added it to our playlist here at WISR, and it's the first time I'd ever heard it, and it's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yeah.
I played it a couple of days ago, early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Had you ever heard it before you heard it here on WISR?
I don't think so.
I never did. Of course, Perry Como, back in his heyday, Perry Como probably did 6 or 7 Christmas albums, you know. He was popular for many, many, many years, and he did a lot of Christmas records, Christmas albums.
He had a show on TV, too, didn't he?
I'm sorry, what was that? We lost you for a second there.
He had a program on TV, too, didn't he?
Oh, yes. Yes, he had a weekly musical variety show. Well, a lot of the entertainers of that era did. Andy Williams, Dean Martin, Perry Como, even Frank Sinatra had a weekly TV show. His never took off, though. It only lasted for 1 year, and then it was canceled.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas indeed. Merry Christmas one and all, as a matter of fact. Well, we need to take a break. We're going to be hooking up with our guest here in just a moment or so from, where is Craig Sharp? Tennessee, Kentucky? Tennessee, I think. So we'll be talking to him on the telephone on the flip side. We'll take a break. Back with more of the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. Right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
ArmCo Credit Union has one sweetheart of a holiday gift for you this year. The event you waited for all year long starts a week early. They've slashed auto rates. Starting December 25th through February 29th, you can get an auto rate as low as 1.99% annual percentage rate. Check out armcocu.com or call 724-284-2020 for credit cost and terms. ArmCo Credit Union is closed Christmas Day, but you can still apply for a loan online or on the mobile app in three easy steps. ArmCo Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is federally insured by NCUA.
On the It's Your Turn program next year on WISR, I'm Dave Malarkey. We're going to be chatting with guest Craig Shirley, who visits with us by telephone. Mr. Shirley is the author of a newly released book called Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. Craig, nice to meet you. Great to have you with us for a few minutes here on the program today.
Thank you, Dave, very, very much. Merry Christmas.
I never even knew the name of George Washington's mother. Has she been written about very much by historians here in this country?
Not really, and that's part of the reason why I wrote the book, Dave, is that there were a few thin books written about her in the years after she passed away in 1783. But they were basically hagiographies that were very, there weren't many facts that went in, and they treated her as if she was, you know, Mary, the mother of Jesus. After the Civil War, American literature took a turn for the more, what was called the reality era, or the era of reality books, and Moby Dick and Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, and it was more grinding, more real, more earthy. And the literature about her took a decided turn for the worse. So before the Civil War, she was depicted as some kind of like a June Cleaver. And after the war, she was depicted as Joan Crawford. Neither was true. And these, again, were very, very slim books, were very, very thinly researched. And even modern Flexner and James Flexner, who wrote a many-volume set on George Washington, portrayed Mary as being very, very shrewish and harsh and domineering and all this. And even Ron Chernow, in his recent book on Washington, gave short shrift to Mary. So I decided to go back and really look at the woman, and went through letters and archival information and various sundry other material. And I came up with a picture of a woman who was much more complex and complicated than people gave her credit for. First of all, is that she was, this is why the book would resonate, I think, with most people today, is that she was a single mother raising six children in her 30s. Her husband, Augustine, had died when George was just 11. George, of course, was the oldest. And she was left alone to raise these six children. She had help, you know, in terms of some slaves, things like that, but no house servants per se. She was definitely upper middle class, but she wasn't wealthy by the aristocratic standards of the day. And also, she lived in a century that was not very hospitable to women. Women, of course, didn't have the vote in the 1800s, but also they couldn't really technically own property. Their job was to take the property that their husbands would leave behind after they passed away, and then turn it over to their eldest sons when they reach majority. So her job was to take, like, Ferry Farm, which Augustine left in his will for George. She was to be the caretaker of it until George turned 18 and then, or 21, depending on the local laws and customs of the time, and give it to George. So, to me, I think she was a fascinating figure of history, and she deserved better than she's gotten in the last 250 years.
I'm assuming her maiden name was Mary Ball, is that right?
Yes. She was from the Millenbach and Epping Forest area of the Northern Neck. The Balls were prominent in the Northern Neck of Virginia, were prominent in that area, and they're still somewhat prominent here today. There's still Ball descendants in the Northern Neck and in the Middle Peninsula. So, yes, her maiden name was Ball. The Ball family was fairly prominent in England, was fairly prominent coming over here. Of course, she went through trauma herself because in the first 11 years of life, she lost her mother, she lost her father, she lost her stepbrother, and she lost her stepfather in the first 11 years. So she knew the reality of the human existence at a very early age.
It was quite common for women in particular to marry young back in those days in the 1700s. Did she, in fact, marry young, too?
Yes, married young, but not as a teenager. As I recall, she something in her early 20s is when she married.
I had no idea that she had six children. I can remember reading, I'm not particularly well-read on George Washington, but I remember reading that he had a half-brother. I didn't know that there were...
Yes, that was Lawrence. That was from his father's first marriage to Jane, through which she produced several children, including Lawrence, who was George's adored older half-brother. Lawrence was in many ways a role model and inspiration for the young George Washington because his father died. But Mary not only had six children, she had six children in something like 9 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And they all lived to adulthood, except for Mildred, the youngest. She died in infancy. But the other five all lived to not ripe old ages. George, of course, was 67 when he died. His brother Samuel was 62 when he died. But they all lived to adulthood.
We're talking, if you joined us a few minutes late, listeners, on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking with Craig Shirley, author of a newly released biography of Mary Ball Washington, the untold story of George Washington's mother. There was one incident that you talk about in your book that is quite fascinating. It had to do with a lightning strike at a home where I believe Mary was hosting a friend. Can you tell us about that story, Craig?
Sure. It was the resulted in her lifetime fear of storms and electrical storms. And of course, why wouldn't it? She was dining at a table during apparently a terrible electrical storm. And a bolt of lightning. Of course, this was before lightning rods were common on houses, before Benjamin Franklin invented the lightning rod to attract attention, to dissipate it into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck the house, came down through the house, and killed her dinner companion, and was such a terrible force that it actually fused the silverware into her friend's or companion's hands when she was killed.
I'm interested in the relationship between Mary Ball Washington and her oldest son, George. Do we know for sure whether they got along? I mean, here we are in the holiday season, Craig, and I don't have to tell you that family politics sometimes gets in the way of holiday.
Family politics is now dominates every family gathering, and my family's no exception, and your family's probably no exception either. We just live in a day and age of contentious arguments and discussions. She and George, it's clear that she loved him. It's clear that he loved her. He always addressed his letters to Mary as Honored Madam. and there were moments of tenderness between the two of them, but she was also very, very demanding, especially about her monthly allowance from George. She needed that money to survive because, you know, she was, you know, after Augustine died, she had no means of real income except for the income from the various farms, which was more agricultural than it was actually hard cash. And he was sometimes very, very frustrated with her and expressed it in his letters and in his writings. And yet he was a very dutiful son, although, interestingly enough, during the 7 years of the American Revolution, there's no record that he ever wrote her a letter, although he wrote many, many letters to Martha. There's also some evidence that Martha and Mary didn't get along, and that Mary did not go to their wedding, but we don't know if she didn't go because she didn't like Martha or because of the distance involved or the weather or something else like that. We just don't know, but she did not attend, nor did she attend, by the way, George's inauguration in Washington, but or in New York City, but that would have been difficult given the distance between Fredericksburg and New York City and her advanced age. Mm-hmm. and her the state of her health, which was not good. So they got along, but it was a very, very complicated relationship. She clearly invested all of her emotion, all of her love in her eldest, in George. I don't know if she saw greatness in him, because when he did great things, she kind of shrugged her shoulders and said, well, George is supposed to do those things. I think he was like most sons, that he was on a lifetime, but ultimately fruitless quest to try to please his mother.
There are some histories that suggest that she was a very strong supporter of the crown, of the Tories.
What we have to do, Dave, is to put ourselves in her shoes in the 1750s, 1760s, 1770s, as the revolution was fomenting, because it was in slow motion. You know, we just didn't throw tea into the Boston Harbor and then declare a revolution. It took time before the Intolerable Acts, the Townsend Acts, the various acts over 10, 15, 20 years for the revolution to be brought to a boil. So she grew up a British subject. She grew up believing in the divine right of kings and the divinity of King George II and King George III. She attended the Anglican Church, which was the Church of England. She was, in every way, a British subject. And this is the world in which she was born, the world that she was comfortable with, the world in which she lived. And then to ask her at, say, the age of 60, 70 years old, said, Mary, forget everything you learned before. It's all wrong. You need now look at the world through a different paradigm. This would have been, you know, culturally shocking for a lot of people, and this explains why there were a lot of Tory sympathizers here in the United States all during the Revolution. Even Benjamin Franklin's son was imprisoned as a Tory spy. Hmm. So it was not the clean-cut, direct line that a lot of people imagined the Revolution was. It was very, very... There were conflicts, and there were people who were openly disdainful of Washington and the American Revolution, who were openly supportive of the British and King George III. Mary never actively undermined her son, but neither did she. The best evidence is that neither did she do anything to actively help him either. There was one account of French soldiers marching through Fredericksburg and having a chance encounter with Mary, and then one of them wrote later that there was no doubt about it, that she was a Tory sympathizer. Hmm. And then there are some other contemporaneous accounts too, which suggest that she was a Tory sympathizer. But it's understandable given the world in which she had been immersed for the first 60, 70 years of her life.
Well, and we have to remember too, and I know from talking with some local historians, Craig, here in western Pennsylvania, George Washington came into western Pennsylvania in the 1750s.
The Whiskey Rebellion.
Yeah. Well, even before that, whenever Virginia claimed what's now Western Pennsylvania, and they were trying to get the French out, Governor, I believe it was Dinwiddie, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, the French and Indian Wars before the American Revolution. That's right. Pennsylvania and down in the Ohio Valley.
And Washington, who was young at the time, only in his mid-20s, he wanted to get a commission in the British Army. Yeah.
And so, before that, he wanted to join the British Navy, and his mother talked him out of it. But that's the proof of my point, is that he himself viewed himself as a British subject.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about Washington after he became president. I did not know this until I saw your book. It was George Washington who came up with the very title of Mr. President. Apparently there was a debate about what to call the president.
John Adams and a group of the framers were in Philadelphia as the Constitution was being drafted, and as they were coming up with, they spent long days trying to come up with a title. You know, His Honor, the Plenipotentiary. He who walks on water. I mean, these long protracted titles. His Excellency, the Honorable. Great God of America, and Washington just got sick of all this tomfoolery, and he told Adams, and he said, "Look, the title is Mr. President. That's it, okay?" And that was it. That was it.
Did Mary Washington ever remarry after the death of Augustine?
No, she never did, and she would have been an attractive widow, because Martha herself was a widow when she married. When she married George, she was quite wealthy. She was a member of the upper class, and that's how George actually entered the upper classes of Virginia society, by marrying Martha. But no, she never got remarried. She had financial assets. She was by no means rich, but she was comfortable. But there's no indication whatsoever of any innocent flirtations or any suitors, any interest, anything like that. After Augustine had passed away,
when George was in his youth, the Washingtons lived in Fredericksburg, near Fredericksburg, Virginia, on a dairy farm. How did he end up at Mount Vernon? Was that Martha's property that he got whenever he married her?
No, I beg your pardon. No, it was his brother's, his stepbrother, Lawrence. It was Little Hunting Creek, which was originally the name of the property, which is owned by Augustine, which later passed to Lawrence. Lawrence renamed it after Edward Vernon, who had served under in the British Navy. He so admired Vernon, he renamed it Mount Vernon. It had been Little Hunting Creek. And then when Lawrence passed away at an early age, in the late 20s, early 30s, his daughter acquired it. And then later, George acquired it from Lawrence's daughter, and that became his famed home and residence for the rest of his life.
Tobacco for Less is perfect if you like to think big. Tobacco for Less is Western Pennsylvania's largest glass emporium, which has hundreds of glass pipes, a custom walk-in humidor stocked with a huge selection of cigars, and a 19-foot vape juice bar. They're always stocked with standard tobacco products, and their health and wellness department maintains a wide selection of CBD products. Tobacco for Less is always expanding and adding to their product lines. Be sure to check out their Sharon location that has just added a large health and wellness department. Stop by one of their locations in Butler, Sharon, or Aliquippa for all your smoking and vaping needs.
And happy holidays from Tobacco for Less.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
In today's fast-paced world, our lives get a whole lot easier when we trust experts. We trust people who know what they're doing. And when it comes to shipping, I trust Going Postal Butler. They're right off Newcastle Road on Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's easy, too. I just cruise on back, go say hello to the friendly folks inside, and they package my items for shipping. And that saves me a whole lot of time. From trying to wrap my item, trying to find the right size box or the bubble wrap or the mailing labels. With Going Postal Butler, I know they provide quality service. They've got great prices. Most importantly, they are trustworthy. So I know that my package will go where I need it to go. That's Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane in the Shockey Mini Storage Complex. Your friendly neighborhood shipping store, Going Postal Butler.
Talking with Craig Shirley, author of Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. I'm struck by the fact that you mentioned earlier in our conversation, Craig, that George always addressed his mother as honored madam. That seems very
madam.
Distant. Was that the custom in the day, or was it just because they weren't really that close?
I think it says two things. I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think it suggests their lack of closeness, personal warmth, but it also suggested his respect for her. There was a style of writing in the era with highfalutin words and clauses and dependent clauses, and you read this writing about of flowery things, of intentions and desires and wants, and you are they ever going to land this thing? But eventually they do. But it was certainly a way of writing, a way of expressing oneself, a way of talking, a way of communicating that is absolutely foreign to our, even though it's the same language, it's absolutely foreign to our current use of the English language.
You mentioned that Mary Ball Washington, George, her oldest son, but she had 6 children over a period of 9 years. Infant mortality was very high back in those days. Did all of those kids survive?
All the 5 of the 6. The youngest, Mildred, died in infancy, but the other 5 survived at least into their 60s. Betty, Samuel, George, and the others all survived into their 60s. So they didn't have complete lives the way we would define, but Mary did. Mary lived into her early 80s until she finally succumbed to breast cancer, which is still prominent in Ball family women even today. Here it is 300 years later, and Ball women, in fact, there was just a descendant, her name was Ball, who owns she owned an antique store over here in Lively, Virginia, on the Northern Neck, and she just passed away from breast cancer. So it remains a prominent, deadly disease in Ball family women, even today.
Still, if she lived into her 80s, boy, back in those days, that was a long life, wasn't it? Wow.
That was a very long life. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows exactly when she was born. Her birth was never recorded in a family Bible, and certainly not with the county or anything else like that. And nobody today knows where she's buried. She's buried somewhere in Fredericksburg, but nobody knows exactly where she's buried. But they do know when she died, and they estimate she was 83 when she died.
You mentioned Mary Ball Washington, George's mother, had really no contact with George Washington throughout the War of Independence. Were they ever able to reunite after the surrender of Yorktown?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, is that after the new government was formed, after the Articles of Confederation, after the new Constitution was adopted, and George was going to New York to assume the duties of becoming the first president of the United States, he made one final trip to Fredericksburg to see his mother and deliver the allowance to her. Now here he is, just elected president of the United States, and he's still delivering allowance to his mother. But he was a dutiful son, but he knew she was dying of breast cancer. She knew that she was dying of breast cancer, and there were two contemporaneous accounts, two letters of their last meeting. And it was, by all accounts, it was described as warm and tender, and that she gave him her blessings on the new venture of becoming the President of the United States. And when he found out, he was in New York, when he found out she had passed away, he went into a room by himself and was there for a number of hours just dealing with his grief at the loss of his mother. So at the end, whatever contretemps, whatever battles had gone on before were all laid to rest and set aside at the end, so that she died knowing that he loved her and that he had been a successful man, and he knew that he had done his best to please his mother.
I'm sure some people are thinking, well, wait a minute, Fredericksburg is not all that far from Washington, D.C. Surely he could have visited her a little more frequently. There was no Washington, D.C. then. The first capital of the United States was in New York.
Right. Yeah, there was no Washington, D.C. It was a swamp. it was New York City, it was Philadelphia, and for a time the Continental Congress met in Baltimore. It wasn't only until Washington designated that area, Washington, D.C., that the nation's capital began to emerge.
Is it true that some of the founders wanted George Washington to go for a third term as president, and he refused?
There was a little bit of mention made of it, but he was resolute about not serving more than two terms. He thought that would be appropriate for any president. No president should accumulate too much power. And, of course, that became the standard until Franklin Roosevelt, mm-hmm. when Franklin Roosevelt ran for four terms. And, of course, to prevent that from ever happening again, the Republican Congress in 1953-54 amended the Constitution so that a president could only serve two terms.
Did George Washington live much longer after he left the presidency and went back to Mount Vernon?
No, not all that long. He lived for several years. I want to say two, three years. I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but he lived for two or three years afterward. By all accounts, it was a happy life. But he went out. It was a snowy, cold, wet December morning. He went out on horseback to inspect some fields, and he came in that afternoon not feeling very well, and reported that he was developing a fever, and he started getting a soreness in his throat, which we later know is strep throat. Later, it used to be called quinsy, but the doctors tried everything they could. Of course, modern medicine at the time was pretty prehistoric. They bled him, and they may have put leeches on him. And nothing would. I mean, obviously, the only thing that would cure it was antibiotics. But antibiotics were 150 years off, and so he finally, as your throat swells up, the breathing passages become blocked, and so that's how he passed away.
Ever since my mother and dad took my brother and I to Mount Vernon when we were kids, I've been fascinated by the life of George Washington. It sounds like you are too, Craig Shirley.
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, I'm a Reagan biographer. I've written five books on Ronald Reagan. I work for Ronald Reagan, but George Washington remains a fascinating figure of history.
One final question. Do you think that George Washington's mother, Mary Ball Washington, has been treated fairly by historians down through the years?
No, she hasn't. She was treated too well in the immediate years after she passed away, and then after the Civil War, she was treated too badly. So I wanted to write this book to bring her back to center, so that everybody could have an honest, accurate look at the life and times of Mary Ball Washington. That's what I hope to have done, Dave.
The author is Craig Shirley. The book is Mary Ball Washington, The Untold Story of George Washington's Mother. Craig, nice to talk with you today. Thanks for spending some time with us here.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Have a good weekend and Merry Christmas.
Same to you, sir. So long now.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
Like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, but then I am dreaming of a white Christmas. Christmas card I write, may your days be merry and bright. And may all your Christmases be white. I'm dreaming of a white